Hello, welcome to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast, where it is all about helping amazing physicians just like you create a wealthy life free from burnout and with the financial security to practice medicine on your own terms. I'm your host, Dr. Elisa Zhang. Hello, and thank you for being a listener of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. I recently returned from an adventure that I have been anticipating for over a decade. But before I get into the details about it, I'd like to talk a bit about goals. It's the beginning of the year, and that's often a time where people think about New Year's resolutions, which are essentially goals for the year. Some people make goals at the end of the year for the next year, and some people think about it in January. So for me, I actually have on my computer a folder that's actually labeled goals. In that folder, I have Word document files where I've written down goals that I've made either at the end of the year for the next year or the beginning of the year. As I look in that folder, I realize that I don't actually do this every year, but I've pretty much done it every other year. When I look at this folder, the oldest file is actually from back in 2005. And this is when I was in the PhD portion of my MD-PhD program. This was also the time where I started learning about personal finances and investing, which is directly reflected in those written goals. In fact, it was probably the reading about personal finances that got me to actually write down goals. It was probably an exercise in some book. I had written a list of goals grouped in 5 different categories: financial goals, education goals, new experience goals, health goals, and marriage goals. So looking at those goals from 2005, I can tell you that some of those goals were accomplished, but others were definitely not. One goal I wrote down, I don't even remember specifically having. If you don't review your goals, or your goals aren't on the top of your mind, then you're less likely to accomplish them, which seems obvious. Certainly, if you forget about a goal, you're probably not working towards it. And it's okay for goals to change as well. A goal that sounded good at the beginning of the year may not be as important at the end of the year, depending on the life events that occurred over the course of the year. I think there are benefits to regularly writing down goals. I'm not sure I want to call it a skill, but when I look at the goals I made in 2010, those goals are definitely written more clearly, and I have actually accomplished most of those goals. I also clearly remember writing down some of those goals from 2010, including the goal of going to Australia and Antarctica by 2020 so that I will have traveled to all 7 continents. I made it to Australia in 2014, and then I became focused on getting to Antarctica. And so this is how it ties to my recent adventure. There were several obstacles to going to Antarctica, and these are the common obstacles for most goals, which is time, money, and energy. There's a saying that goes that you either have 2 of the 3. In the beginning of life, when you're young, you have time and energy, but generally not much money. Then as you get older, during midlife, you have money and energy, but no time. And of course, as you get older towards the end of your life, you finally have time and money, but lack energy. I first attempted to go to Antarctica in December 2016, but it didn't quite pan out. This was actually the first winter after I finished my fellowship training. We had a friend who worked for a cruise line, and we were trying to use his friends and family discount, but we couldn't actually get it for Antarctica with enough advance notice for my job at the time. In retrospect, I wish I had made the decision to go to Antarctica in the winter of 2016 to 2017 and plan for it well in advance. A little bit more on that later. But one of the obstacles at that time was money, because as I said, I had just finished my fellowship training. There's really no cheap way to go to Antarctica as a tourist. Yes, it's possible to find work that would send you to Antarctica, but that's not what I was looking for. Most tourists will go to Antarctica on a ship. It is possible to fly to Antarctica, but once you get there, unless you're staying in a research station, you'll likely be boarding a ship for the time that you're there. And flying to Antarctica and getting on a ship costs more than sailing to Antarctica. When I first started looking at trips to Antarctica, the cheapest trips were $5,000 to $10,000 per person for a 10-day cruise. And then there was also the cost to go to Ushuaia, where the ship departs. But honestly, I didn't necessarily want to go on the cheapest boat or be in a small cabin with 4 people in it. Originally, I really wanted to go with National Geographic, which
in my memory, was around $17,000 per person. Again, being fresh out of medical training in 2016, I did not have that kind of money on hand to spend on a vacation, but I knew that I would in the not so far future. So I waited, and my goal was by 2020, so I knew I could set aside enough money by then to do it. So why do I wish I had gone back then in 2016? Well, again, the biggest obstacle as you get to middle age is time. Getting to Antarctica takes 2 days to sail across the Drake Passage, which is also infamous for causing seasickness due to the rough waves. A 10-day cruise really means 4 days in the Drake Passage and 6 days or less actually in Antarctica. Flying to Ushuaia from the United States also takes close to 2 days. That means a trip to Antarctica is a minimum of 14 days or 2 weeks. And that's doable. Many people take 2 weeks for vacation. But sometimes it's not only about time, it's about timing. And that's something my husband likes to remind me of often. Ships only go to Antarctica between November and March, during Antarctica's summer. Outside these times, there's so much sea ice that it's not really possible for most ships to reach land. Nathan, my husband, is a high school teacher, which means he generally gets exactly 2 weeks for winter break, which is the time frame when it's actually possible to go to Antarctica. That's why, in retrospect, it would have been great for us to go the winter of 2016 to 2017. He actually wasn't working that year, since that was when I, again, just completed my medical training. So we actually moved to Virginia for my first job as an attending, and he being a teacher, it's somewhat hard to find a teaching job from long distance, so he actually didn't end up working that first year. In 2017, he accepted a teaching position, which now made it a bit more tricky for us to be able to go together to Antarctica. I actually found a ship that sailed exactly during his winter holiday break in 2020. It wasn't with National Geographic, but it looked like a decent trip, so we went with it. I paid the deposit and even planned for my parents to come with us on that same ship. But we all know what happened in 2020. When the pandemic hit in March, I merely thought about whether or not we would make it to Antarctica. And of course, as the months wore on, we finally heard that our cruise was postponed until December 2021, and that we could either go in December 2021 or take a credit with a cruise company that wouldn't expire. I didn't want to commit to having to travel to Argentina and then get on a cruise ship with over 100 people I didn't know by December 2021, so we took the credit and hoped that the cruise line would financially survive the pandemic. So it felt even more epic when we actually finally made it to Antarctica for winter break this year. Or I guess I should say last year. Nathan did end up having to miss 2 days of school, but thankfully we were able to get that approved in advance. In 2023, I actually accomplished two large travel goals of mine, going to all 50 states in the United States, as well as all 7 continents on Earth. This morning, of course, the day I'm recording this podcast and not when you're listening to it, I spent time writing goals. I will say that in the last 3 years, I spent a lot of time writing and reviewing goals. It's partially due to all the self-development and business coaching that comes with entrepreneurship. And that includes the books I've been reading or the audiobooks I've been listening to. At one point, I was even writing monthly goals, which involved reviewing the prior month's goals and then setting the upcoming month's goals. I've also done this quarterly, writing quarterly goals and then going through the same review process. I recently read The Gap in the Game, which encourages writing 3 daily wins for the current day and then writing 3 wins that you want for the next day each evening. Those 3 wins for the next day could actually be looked at as goals that you want to accomplish. So when you're actually in the process of setting goals, you may want to consider how often you want to set those goals, as well as how often you want to review those goals. Whether you do it monthly, quarterly, or annually. If you are setting goals annually, you probably want to review them more than annually. Goals also have different timelines. You could even think about your to-do list for the day as a list of short-term goals that you want to accomplish. A goal can be something very simple, like getting a workout before coming home. Goals can also be something of an intermediate timeline, and that's something that I always say is a goal that you want to complete in the next month or a few months. Or goals can be long-term, something you want to complete in a year or in the next 3 years or 5 years. There could be many steps to accomplish before the ultimate goal is met, and each of those little steps are actually just other goals. There are some goals which may be ongoing, while there are other goals which, once you reach them, it's completed. Many people talk about making SMART goals, with SMART standing for specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. I think this can be a good framework for some goals, but isn't necessary for all goals. And if you don't meet the original timeline you set for the goal, it's always okay to move the timeline. We don't always have a great idea of what's truly achievable in a specific timeline. Going back to those 2005 goals, one of the goals I wrote was to have a net worth of $1 million by 2010. While it is certainly achievable to go from a zero net worth to $1 million in net worth in 5 years, it does depend somewhat on context. For me, it was probably not that achievable considering my other goal was to graduate with my MD PhD by 2010. And when I wrote that goal, I was a grad student making $20,000 a year. I'm not saying that was impossible, but it's probably hard to accomplish two large goals that will both take a lot of time and energy, as well as those two goals didn't really overlap. Increasing my net worth to $1 million and achieving my MD PhD at the same time would have been a lot to happen in 5 years. I guess I could say that by earning my MD and PhD by 2010, I now had $1 million brain by having invested in the ability to create $1 million in financial net worth. And it is normal to have multiple goals in different areas of life. This morning, I wrote down financial goals, career goals, health goals, relationship goals, and your experience goals. Some goals will take more time and energy than others. Some goals take consistent work over time to reach that goal, while other goals can be done with putting in a lot of work and focus all at once. Some goals may be at odds with other goals. Writing out your goals can help you clarify which goals are more important and less important to you. Regularly setting goals, reviewing goals, and thinking about goals will improve your odds of actually achieving those goals. And with that, I'll end this episode by talking more about my Antarctica adventure. My goals for Antarctica were to set foot on the continent and preferably stay overnight on land. I also want to share the experience with my husband. While it was important to him to visit all seven continents, there was a part of me that wanted to feel like we traveled the world together. That doesn't mean we have to go everywhere together, and I've traveled to a lot of countries without him, but I did want to go to Antarctica together, and we had previously gone to Australia together. We ended up going on the ship Ortelius with Oceanwide Expeditions, doing their 12-day base camp trip. Their 12-day base camp trip includes mountaineering, kayaking, and camping, which their 10-day trip does not. Nathan's school year actually ended on Tuesday, December 19th, which is a little odd, but that allowed us to start our travels on Wednesday, December 20th, giving us a few extra days, and also the reason why he had to take two additional days off of school in January. We flew to Buenos Aires with a layover in Miami, Florida, arriving in Argentina on the morning of Thursday, December 21st. Buenos Aires actually has two airports, one for international flights and one for domestic flights, which means we had to transfer from the international airport, EZE, to the domestic airport, AEP, in order to fly to Ushuaia. It was recommended to have at least 5 hours between flights, so we basically spent Thursday at the airport. I had booked a car transport service to take us between airports, and we had a great driver who even agreed to stop in the city so that we could pick up a local SIM card for our phones, since we weren't able to actually get this at either airport. We arrived in Ushuaia on Thursday evening with all the flights going as planned, which was a great relief. Because of Nathan's odd winter break schedule, we actually got to spend 2 full days in Ushuaia before boarding the Ortelius on Sunday, December 24th. We spent Friday hiking at Tierra del Fuego National Park, which was beautiful. There was a little bit of rain, but the skies were mostly clear, and I got some amazing photographs as well. On Saturday morning, we did a sailing excursion on the Beagle Channel, where we got to hike on one of the islands in the channel, as well as see sea lions and birds by the lighthouse. After lunch, we hiked up to Marshall Glacier, which is at the north side of Ushuaia. Then on Sunday, we dropped off our luggage at the drop point for the ship. We spent the day exploring Ushuaia and went to the Maritime Museum. Our ship boarded at 4 p.m., and then we were on our way to Antarctica. Our ship, the Ortelius, had 108 total passengers and 54 crew during our voyage. The passengers' age ranged from 11 years old to 76 years old. There were about a dozen kids on board with their family. The captain of the ship said that it was unusual to actually have so many kids and that the prior trip actually only had two children. The majority of the passengers were from the United States, but there were many people from Europe, as well as a few people from Australia, New Zealand, and East Asia. There were solo travelers, family groups, as well as couples. There were actually three couples who were on their honeymoon on the ship. The family groups included adult children and parent or parents, as well as families with preteen or teenage children. Part of the fun of the ship was actually meeting other people. As for the Drake Passage, we neither had the Drake Lake nor the Drake Shake, but basically had the average amount of roughness. There was actually a ship doctor on board to treat passengers. She was actually able to supply passengers with anti-nausea medications. Nathan and I both wore scopolamine patches, and I brought with me ginger, Dramamine, Zofran, and promethazine. I personally don't tend to get motion sickness, but Nathan does. I personally was fine during the Drake Passage, but Nathan refunded his meal six times on the way to Antarctica despite all these medications. Nathan did feel much better as we got to the calmer waters of the Antarctica archipelago, and so he didn't actually need to take any medications and took the patch off at that time and was totally fine. On the way back, I actually didn't use the patch or any medications to see how I would do, and I was fine. Nathan also did better. He was able to keep his food down, but he pretty much spent almost that entire time in the cabin lying down or sleeping. During the days on the Drake Passage, there were actually a lot of talks on various topics, so there actually was things to do, and I never ended up getting bored, which I thought might be the case during the sailing days. The cabins also had a TV with a lot of movies and shows, similar to what you see on a plane's entertainment system. One of the other things I really liked about our ship is that the bridge had an open policy, so we could actually go up to the bridge at any time. The captain was really friendly, and I talked to him many times during the expedition. We had 8 days to enjoy Antarctica. Each day, there was a morning activity and an afternoon activity. The activities that were open to everyone was either doing a landing, a Zodiac cruise, or sometimes we did half a landing and half a Zodiac cruise. During the landings, we typically got to snowshoe or walk on land. During most, if not all, the landings, there was penguin colonies that we got to observe penguins, and we even got to see baby chicks. Penguins are actually hilarious to watch. We also got to visit some historic huts as well as two research stations. In order to get to land, we actually had to take a Zodiac from the ship. During the Zodiac cruises, we would go searching for wildlife and were actually able to see a lot of whales and seals up close. It was truly incredible. The icebergs were gorgeous, and we also got to just enjoy all the mountain scenery. We could also sign up to go either mountaineering or kayaking, which we could do each activity once during the trip. For mountaineering, there was the basic mountaineering as well as technical mountaineering. We didn't actually have the boots to qualify for technical mountaineering, so we ended up doing the basic mountaineering excursion on Melchior Island, and we did kayaking near the Brown Research Station. The option of camping was available, and it was split up into two nights. We ended up camping on the second night and spent the night at Kerr Point. We also had the opportunity to actually go swimming in Antarctica and do what's called the polar plunge. It was actually in the end offered to us twice. It's usually only offered once. The first polar plunge was at Cooperville Island, and it was on a day where we had beautiful blue, clear skies, no wind. It was just actually gorgeous out. The water was still super cold, and we had to walk out into the water from the beach. The beach was actually really rocky with rather large rocks, like not truly sand. And so I was really glad I brought my Tevas. Even though the water was really cold, And my feet were like freezing as I'm trying to walk out to deeper water to actually do the polar plunge. When I actually got out of the water, because it was so nice out, it actually felt pretty warm. Our second polar plunge was at Deception Island. It was really cloudy that day, but Deception Island is an active volcano, so there's actually geothermal activity in the water. There was a portion of the water that was actually really heated to be quite warm. The area where the water was hot was actually an area where the water was really shallow, like only probably a couple of inches, but laying in that water after being in the really cold water felt so good and was totally worth it. If you're curious about how food was on the ship, breakfast and lunch were buffet and dinner was plated. We would order what we wanted for dinner during lunch. There were generally two appetizer options and three entree dinner options, with one entree dinner always being vegetarian. On New Year's Eve, we actually had a barbecue dinner and party on the holodeck. The party actually went all the way past midnight. I left around 1 o'clock. At some point, the party actually came from outdoors to indoors, but it was actually probably the best New Year's party I've been to in a long time. Overall, the food was truly excellent. They actually had a baker on board, so we had fresh bread all the time. There was a lot of variety in the food offered. I actually really enjoyed eating on the ship and even gained some weight on this vacation. And the wait staff was fantastic as well. The service on the ship was really exceptional. We had an amazing time. We were told that we were really lucky with the weather. We had multiple bright and sunny days. We did not have any days that had severe wind, and the temperatures were mostly just above freezing. It wasn't actually that different from winter in Cleveland. In fact, when I got back home, I felt like it was basically the same weather as what we had in Antarctica. The lead expedition leader said that this was the first trip that he's done since 2018, when he started this work, that not a single excursion had to be canceled due to weather. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you would like to see pictures from Antarctica, check out my Instagram at Grow Your Wealthy Mindset or friend me on Facebook. These links are also in the show notes. I know this episode wasn't all that organized and is unlike a lot of the other episodes of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. I had this idea of incorporating talking about goals while sharing about my recent adventure, and I hope that message came across. If you don't know where you're going, it's hard to actually get there. And I think goals are a way of actually thinking about where you want to go. And that way, setting financial goals can certainly help you build a wealthy mindset. I'd love to hear what you think about this episode, and if you would like more episodes like this, you can always reach me by emailing me at growyourwealthymindset@gmail.com. Thanks for being a listener, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you could share it with your friends and colleagues. And now for the disclaimer. I am not a certified financial planner, accountant, or attorney, and nothing I say should be construed as professional investment, tax, or legal advice. This show is primarily for your education and entertainment. I am a physician, but I'm probably not your physician. So if you need any medical advice, please contact your own physician. Thank you.